You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
The Babylon Project was our last best hope for peace.
Well, we're in it now.
It failed.
In the last few hours, we have learned that warships are coming this way from Earth. Their orders are to seize command of Babylon 5 by force.
But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for victory.
My words are inadequate to the burden of my heart.
The year is 2260. The place, Babylon 5.
And assuming we survive this, how old will you be in a year if you don't want to speak Minbari?
It's like I've always said, you can get more with a kind word and a two before than you can with just a kind word. Please, continue.
Only one human can ever survived battle with the Minbari fleet. He is behind me. You are in front of me. If you value your lives, be somewhere else.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic, Babylon 5. This week, a review of Season 3. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And a synopsis. This season's called The Point of No Return and was aired in 1995 to 1996. Earth's government continues to become more xenophobic, while on Babylon 5, Sheridan and Delenn, who become romantically involved during the course of the season, create a conspiracy of light to try to reveal the truth behind the Shadow's influence. Historically tense relations between Earth and its Mars colony reach breaking point when Mars declares independence and Earth's government declares martial law and attacks. Sheridan, outraged, withdraws Babylon 5 from the Earth Alliance, supported by the Minbari. The fate of Babylon 4 is discovered when Sinclair returns to the station to request Sheridan's help. Sinclair had been destined to use the time travel to take Babylon 4 back in time to the previous Minbari Shadow War, where he is transformed into the revered Minbari leader, Valen, using the same device Delenn used for her transformation. Ambassador Malari realizes his deal with the Shadows has become dangerous and tries to sever ties with Mr. Morden, but fails. Kosh informs Sheridan that the Shadows can be fought with telepaths. The Vorlons attack the Shadows at Sheridan's insistence, but the Shadows kill Kosh in retaliation. Sheridan's wife, presumed dead on an archaeological dig on the planet of Zahadum years earlier, arrives at the station and convinces Sheridan to accompany her to Zahadum. The Shadows attempt to force Sheridan to join their cause whilst their ships are threatening Babylon 5. Sheridan, guided by Kosh's words, flies a vessel loaded with explosives into the planet while jumping into a large chasm. The Shadow ships withdraw, but Garibaldi, deployed to defend the station, does not return. So, guys, Season 3, what were your overall impressions of Season 3 and what were your memories of it? And you know, has watching this revived any forgotten episodes that you'd not remembered?
Well, I would say that it definitely brought back a lot of details because it's probably been 7 or 8 years, maybe more, since I've done a rewatch. I have a recollection of Season 3 being even more action-packed than this, but maybe I'm confusing it with Season 4. I'm not sure, so it's hard to say. Lots of fun. Some standout episodes. It's hard to remember the episode titles. It's no Star Trek The Next Generation, which I can remember everything about, and I've seen probably 2 dozen times each episode, but this here I've only seen maybe 4 or 5 times, so it's not as stuck in the brain, but still one of the best series ever created.
Yeah, I think your favorite episode was episode 10, Severed Dreams, which I believe was Dan's as well, Dan's favorite episode.
Hmm.
But don't ask me what it was about, because I couldn't tell you just from the title.
Yeah, I know. And that's that. It is an annoying one, but it's the sort of... it's like, because it comes in the middle of season three, it is literally in the middle of the whole run of the five seasons, where President Clark tries to seize control of Babylon 5 by force, forcing Sheridan and the command crew to declare Babylon 5 an independent state, breaking away from Earth Alliance and taking arms against Clark's government. And Delenn confronts the Grey Council. So that's why it was placed in that position, because they could. It was the linchpin. It was the right. This is where we're up to. You know, this is where we've come up to. But now it all changes and it all kicks off from here on. So, and I got that feeling. I got that feeling that halfway through sort of season three, we lost the early season one nice cuddly sort of, you know, feeling to it all, where it's all just funny politics and you know, silly things. And, you know, drinking on the tables and all this stuff, you know, all that sort of thing. And we're now into the sort of serious stuff, and the war is starting to escalate and things are kicking off back home. And it changes. The whole show changes.
Yeah, it's the middle of the entire series run. It's the tipping point, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah, good. Yeah, pivot. Yeah, it's exactly that. Dan, what were your thoughts of season three overall?
Yeah, it was the season I think I remembered better than season one and two. There were moments and characters that kind of stood out in the memory a lot more. You know, I haven't watched it since I was a teenager, watching it first time when it was on TV. So I've come back almost forgetting most of the plot points. Like, there are the big bits, you know, the war, the declaring independence, the stuff that happened in here, but even more than just the nitty-gritty details, there were lots of moments that I'd completely forgotten. But overall, this season, I think I've enjoyed the most. And I'm wondering if the stats are going to reflect that, like, you know, where our scores have sort of landed over the weeks, and whether I have actually enjoyed it more than season two or one. You know, I wonder if there's going to be an upset like last time, where it turned out that actually I thought I'd enjoyed season two more, but statistically, I think I'd enjoyed season one more. Season one, can now compared to this, feels like it was just taking too long. It was slogging too much. But we got so many good moments in this. I didn't mind that. You know, we needed that to build up to what we got this season. And then you've got something like War Without End, which is just absolute genius and takes everything we learned in season one and made it even better. So you can't say that you could just ignore the other 2 years. You have to watch it in conjunction with everything else.
So you're the first season that you watched, you averaged 3.2.
Mm-hmm.
Second season was 3.17.
Ooh.
And the third season is 3.82.
Oh, wow.
Fairly consistent.
Yeah, but obviously you prefer the third season to the previous two. Let's see what Sean had. Sean's season one was 3.4. Season two was 3.52. I'm just writing these down, so excuse me. And this looks good. 3.84. So that's almost the same as Dan's for season three.
Interesting. And what about Paul's opinions and ratings?
Well, here we go. It's give us a sec here. 3.55 for season one, which was higher than you guys by a long way. And I think that's that. I do prefer season one because I like that. I like that sort of thing. A little more lighthearted. Your day to day stuff. Things happen. It's episodic. Nothing's really, you know, majors going on, if you like, until we get to the end when, obviously, Sinclair leaves and we move into Sheridan. Second season, 3.52, which is exactly the same as Sean. A little bit higher than Dan. And season three, ooh, wow, 3.98.
Wow.
Well, I wouldn't have said that was going to be the case. Because I overall, my feelings of season three is it's not my favourite season. You know, season one was, and season two was okay. You know, that sort of, I like those, you know, those seasons. You know, but I always thought that the first time I watched this was, I think, as I mentioned before, was a long time ago, obviously, when it first came out, and then I watched it about 6 years ago, and the second time I watched it was, let me start again. The first time I watched it was in the 90s, and I watched the first two seasons, and then for some reason I don't remember watching any of the others. So 6 years ago, when I bought the DVDs, I watched the whole thing. So I watched season one and two for the second time, and season three, four, and five for the first time. And from that memory, I have, you know, yeah, season one and two, I remember a lot of it because I've now seen it twice. Season three, four, and five got worse as we went along. Three, I felt it was starting to become the Sheridan and Delenn show. And I think four and five was so much war going on, I couldn't even remember any of the things, you know, that happened. This season, I have not remembered many, if any, of the episodes that I've watched. I've remembered certain small bits, but very few and far between. It's a, you know, a complete mystery to me. I didn't, and it was only really even at the end in Zahadum, where he jumped off the cliff, I vaguely remembered that. Obviously, it's a cliffhanger, so to speak. So that's going to stick in your mind a bit more. But really, this season was a mystery to me, and it was good to watch it and enjoy it for not just because I want to see a bit of action or I want to see Shakar do more. I think, if anything, he disappeared for large periods of time. Malari was becoming an arse, and I didn't really like that because I liked him in the first season. I thought he was quite funny, and, you know, but that's obviously, the plot was to do that. So I'm quite surprised that 3.98 is such a high thing. And when I look at my scores, they are in general higher, because there's some good serious stuff in season three, and it all starts to happen. And I understand the political machinations now, and I understand the reasons why people were doing the things that they were doing, and the hard decisions they've had to make, and the sacrifices in some cases. So, yeah, and it's not a fun subject, watching planets go to war and losing millions of Narns. I mean, it's not, you know, this is not a happy thing. This is a real serious look at what life is like, and whether it's something to do with the Russian war at the moment, you know, the poor Ukrainians being, you know, being the Narns and getting battered by these ironically Russian guys who are a bit like the Centauris. I'm not saying that the Ukrainians look like lizards at all. I'm sorry, that's not what I'm saying. But whether that's happening in the world at the moment, and whether that's affected my thoughts on it, I don't know. There's a lot of parallels. There are really, you know, a lot of parallels. Even now, you can see in JMS's writing that war is war. It never changes. You know, millions die, and
you could watch this series in 100 years from now, and whatever's going on then will be similar to that to the show.
So exactly, it's
just the life cycle. Keep repeating.
That's right.
Yeah.
So yes, Duncan.
The highest score that I think all three of us have gone for is that even in the worst of the episodes, the ones we really didn't enjoy, we could appreciate that they were quite confident in how they could make the episode, whereas they were still unsteady of themselves in season one, as most TV shows are. They aren't cemented in the characters. They don't really know what production is going to be. By season two, they've obviously had the upset of, you know, Sinclair into Sheridan, so they've got to sort of start all over again. So they haven't, again, cemented their main character, the focus of the show. So by season three, they're now cemented. They've got every character pretty much where they want. They may have lose some, like Talia, but they know what to do. Production is full swing. They've got a crew behind them. They know what the SFX now look like. You know, when the actors are thinking of, oh, that's a Minbari vessel, they've had 2 years to sort of know what was on TV, to sort of watch what a Minbari vessel is going to be, so they can react a bit more believably. And then you've got, you know, Jakar has gone through all this big arc, so he's changed as a character, and we've been able to examine it. So, you know, I'm noticing I'm not even picking up on any airplane moments anymore, like the unintentionally bad stuff, even in the bad episodes. So I think there is a confidence to season three that allows it to deliver some really terrible episodes like Grey 17 missing or the late delivery from Avalon. And we still enjoy it. You know, we still actually said, well, actually, it's an enjoyable 45 minutes of TV, even if it's not the greatest offering on TV at all.
Well, it's funny you should bring up late delivery from Avalon, because that's my worst episode of season 3. However, it scores a 2.5. Now, that does put it into my bottom 10. But 2.5, when you look at a score of 5, is in the middle, theoretically. My average is actually sort of 3.7 over all of the seasons. So it is obviously a long way off what I would consider to be an average episode. But even a bad episode of Babylon 5 is 2.5 out of 5, 50%. It's not bad going, really. Both of you guys said Convictions was not your favourite.
Remind us.
Convictions is a group of monks from Earth arrive on the station. A series of random bombings rocks the station and threatens the crew. Shikar and Londo are trapped in the elevator.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah, not a good one, but you both scored... oh, I've lost it now. Convictions is up there. You both scored it 2.5 and 2. So again, 2.5 for Sean. Middle of the road, although his average is 3.6 overall. So again, similar to me. Dan's lagging behind it. 3.4 in total, but gave that an episode of 2. So was not convinced. But we all gave it, you know, below average... or below what we would consider average scores. So, but still, you know, in the sort of two, season one, we were giving them, well, they were all over the place, really.
Well, our reading system is very scientific and well thought
That's
out.
That's for true.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot more twos and threes in there in season one. But yes, so overall, we all think that season three is the best season so far. By a long way as well, but you know, judging by our ratings, you know, sort of up into the 3.9s, 3.8s out of 5. So, so that's good. That's good. We're getting better as we go along. Maybe I'll be surprised. Maybe I'm watching this more intelligently than I was last time. Last time I just watch it because it's a TV show and I enjoy it, and that was it. And I don't like this bit, I don't like that bit. And then suddenly I grew up over the last year and I've started watching, maybe some people will say I haven't, but and I've started to watch films and watch TV series a little bit more maturely, instead of just dismissing it as I like that, or no, I don't like that, or whatever. I'm watching it more and enjoying the story and the characters, and as we mentioned in our other podcast, the Cosmic Pizza podcast, in our previous episode where we spoke to Casey and she brought her five favorite films, and one of them was the Three Billboards from Ebbing, Missouri, or whatever the title is. I would never have watched that film if I knew what it was about and how it was started to finish and all this. I'd never have watched that film. It's not the film I like. It doesn't have a beginning. It doesn't have an end. It's sort of a middle film. And I watched it and enjoyed it more, mainly because my friend Lee has been showing me some of these films. A bit, Fargo was one, ironically, with the same leading lady in it. And another one, which I can't remember off the top of my head. But it was all, they're all sort of the Coen brothers stuff. So, which are really bizarre films, and they, like I say, they don't tend to have a beginning or an end. They just have this middle bit, and there's a story sort of happens. And I'm starting to, I'm beginning to understand them more, where normally I just go, well, that was crap. There was no beginning, and they didn't show what happened at the end. I've got to think about the end. I'm paying you to write the damn thing, not, you know, I don't want to make it up myself. So I'm becoming a little bit more mature in my watching of things. So maybe season 4 might be better than I remembered it, and better than I've given it credit for in the past. So
and that's funny, because I prefer not taking notes when I'm watching a show and just letting it flow over me. So I find that with this whole Babylon 5 podcast that we're doing, I'm enjoying the series less than I would if I was just watching the thing.
I think you're right. I spend, to write the synopsis that I write out, I have to watch it scene by scene and then make a quick summary of the scene. Sometimes the scenes are quite detailed and you have to put a lot in. Others are just Sheridan walks in, says hello and walks out. You know, so it's straightforward. Some of the scenes in the first episode of the next season, which we've already watched, you know, prepared, ready. We haven't recorded it yet, but there's a lot of talking in the first episode, and it's just blah blah blah. I mean, it's just going over my head. It's very philosophical and interesting, but it's just talking, and I can't write that down. I can't fully, and I certainly can't put that in as a clip. It's like 5-10 minute long speeches, and because I'm tapping away, it takes 2 hours to watch an episode. And we do 2 a week. So that's 4 hours. I'm sitting there tapping away, trying to get a synopsis together to, you know, and by the time I've done that, I've not watched it. I've just gone scene by scene, cut. Oh, hang on. Rewind that bit. Type. Oh yeah. He said this. Right. Okay. And there are times when I've come to give my opinion on it. And I thought, did I really enjoy that? I mean, it was a lot of action, but I've been going backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards. And then it's just, I missed the episode. I tried again today to watch the episode and realized I actually knew what was happening in the episode because I had seen it, but so I wasn't really interested in watching it. I thought, wow, this is not enjoyable. This is a chore, and not, you know, I need more time to sit down and watch it. And maybe not taking notes is a good idea. Let's put it that way.
That's why we're currently watching season 3 of Star Trek Picard. I'm not taking notes. I'm just enjoying the thing. I don't have a podcast where I have to talk about all the ins and the outs. Mandalorian season 3, I think, is on right now too. I think it's season 3. I'm enjoying that. Like, I've just been enjoying things because I don't have to podcast about it.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
But maybe I'm not getting the depth that I could otherwise be getting if I was analyzing it more in detail either. So there's trade-offs.
I mean, yeah, there is that. I mean, my understanding of what's going on is has increased because of talking to it with you guys. If I had just watched it and not thought about it, yeah, right, I've seen that episode, move on, which is what I do at lunchtimes. At lunchtimes at work, I download some TV programs to my phone, and I can watch it, you know, one episode per day of a series, and I'm forcing myself to get through it quickly so I can get to the next episode and then get to the next, you know, the next season, and I need to finish this so I can get on to the next TV series, and you know, it's I'm not taking it all in. I've watched loads of stuff. I've watched all of Hill Street Blues. Fantastic, fabulous episode by episode. It was brilliant. Can I remember any of it? No.
Not at all. No. And so what I find is an advantage because I'm watching Picard and I've subscribed to a pile of Star Trek podcasts. They're all discussing it. So I have my original viewing and my thoughts on it. And then I hear like 10 or 12 other people and their thoughts on it. So I get a bigger picture. And then I watch a YouTube thing about it from Trek Culture where they break it down. So I've watched the hour, and then I've probably listened to about 5 hours worth of discussion.
Well, at the moment, me and my wife are actually watching it. And then when my dad comes around at the weekend, it used to be every other weekend, sort of now it's pretty much every weekend, we watch an episode with him so that he's getting the experience. So we watch it twice. So that's, you know,
and that's what I do too. I'll watch it and then I'll watch it with Melissa. So,
yeah. And I'm making my way through Lower Decks as well. When I go around to Lee's, we were watching a little bit of Moonlighting. But as we're getting to the end of that, we said, right, okay, let's. But he hasn't seen season 3 of Lower Decks yet, so we've watched the first, I think, 3 episodes of that. So that's really good.
Nice.
But yeah, anyway. Meanwhile, back at Babylon 5. In fact, Lee has just messaged me. What's he messaged me? Jonathan Frakes explains why Paramount Plus doesn't make Star Trek movies. Okay.
Because it won't afford to soon when Paramount Plus completely loses everything again. Because it's been bought out yet again.
That's a sign. So.
I don't know. Just keep making a profit on it. I don't know why. Perhaps I do know why. It's all these people paying for it. So anyway, let's talk about Jakar as a character.
But before we do that, let's play a promo for another podcast right here on the ESO Network.
I'm George from the Metal Geeks. I just wanted to let you know, if you're looking for a place where we can chat about the coolest and the geekiest of things, comic books, movies, especially heavy metal, then you're not looking for anything else except for our show, Metal Geeks, where I'm always right and Carrie sometimes right, especially when it comes to movies. We're there having a good time, me, Dave, and Carrie, talking about geeky stuff and metal. I repeat, metal meets geeky, Metal Geeks.
So, Jakar.
I love Jakar. He's probably one of my favorite characters. He might be my most favorite character. He's great. He's not nearly as handsome as Marcus, but those red eyes pierce the soul.
Yeah.
Well, there is that. That's right. And the British accent that he has, or whatever accent it is, supposed to be.
It is British. He is British, yeah.
Yes. So Jakar, yeah, great actor. Andreas Katsoulis. He's great. What more can you say about him? He wasn't in season three as much as I really wanted him to be. He's missing from a lot of episodes, actually. But his character arc over the entire five seasons is fantastic. We're only in the middle of it right now. He's not the Messiah yet, but he will be. Not the one yet, but he will be the one.
He's really in the middle of it at the moment, isn't he? I mean, we've just got to the end.
That's season four.
Season four. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead there. Yes. Having watched the episode. He's about to end up in the middle of it. But we have seen a sort of a jump forward, haven't we, from one of the episodes in season three where we see what has happened to him in the future. So it'll be interesting to find out how that happens.
Definitely.
Mm. But yeah, I like Jakar as well. I think he's Andreas Katsoulis is an amazing actor, because he projects himself through that makeup, through the prosthetics of the let's call it a lizard face, with all those scales and a great big chin as well, and he's got to carry that great big coat with all the attachments to it and everything.
Yeah.
He's a big guy anyway. I mean, you can see he's got a big chest. You can tell that just by looking at him. He's a big, I think he's Greek, isn't he, from memory?
I believe so. And of course, he played Commander Tomalak in Star Trek The Next Generation. You got to see his face a little bit more there, but he was still under the Romulan makeup.
That's right.
And yet, some actors, the mask is playing them, but not this guy. Mm. He is Jakar. Like, there's no way around it.
Yes, yeah, it's fabulous, and like I say, you can anybody who can act through makeup like that, I absolutely love, because a lot of it is with the eyes, but his expressions come through as well. Mm. It's a bit like Garrick. I can't think of the guy's name. Andrew
Robinson.
That's him. Mm. He's the same. He acts through his eyes. And even when you cover his face and just show his eyes, if you see him in Dirty Harry, he plays the Scorpio killer in Dirty Harry, they put a ski mask on him and his eyes are there. And he's actually doing a precursor to Garrick there by acting through his eyes and showing all the emotions and everything through that. It's incredible skill. I've only ever seen a few people do it. I think his arc is a little bit stunted because he isn't in a lot of the episodes, but he does become a very powerful person in the Narn community. And even though he is ejected from there and thrown out and becomes Citizen Jakar halfway through the season, he still has that that commanding presence and the leadership qualities that are needed for somebody to take a revolt to the Centauri's oppression. So Via Koto, as he sometimes says.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways, Koto and Koto. So who the heck knows? Stephen first as Veer. He's such a sad sack of a character, but he's so great. Like the actor himself portraying this character, it's awesome. And the character itself is fantastic as well. Just so put upon and always so positive. And he's a sad character as well, but he makes the best of his situation.
Yeah, and he's honorable as well. He's a lot of honor to him. He knows things that, you know, are being done incorrectly. So, and he tries to do something about it and help the Narns, you know, escape. And it's just he's just such a great character and a great performer as well. His comedic timing is brilliant. One of my favorite scenes is with him with Ivanova, where he's trying to explain about asking a woman out, and he hasn't got past one before, you know, when they've actually got six. So it's it's just like that whole scene is just amazing, and his ability to sort of start a sentence, realize he's going to say something embarrassing, and then sort of try and worm his way around the word and you know, stumble upon it and all this. It's just brilliant. It's a fabulous performance. Yeah, but at the same time, can play the straight character just as well. He obviously gets farmed off to the Minbari at some point to, you know, become an ambassador over there, so that Lando can get him out of the way a bit, and focus on, you know, working with the shadows and what have you. But even then, he realizes that the only friend he's got really is Veer. So he has to bring him back.
And I think that, to echo what you were just saying, that he can go from that comedic into the serious in the same scene. It's not just later in the episode. He could literally just switch from one to the other. And to go with sort of Jakar and what we were saying there, Jakar has this arc from being the devious and scheming to a far more religious warrior rebel. And it's a completely different character. And, you know, we are taken on that journey by Andreas Katsoulis. Whereas Viakoto's story, everything he does is believable to the Viakoto we first met. You know, he's cowardly, but he uses his smarts to sort of do some really important things in this universe, like trying to smuggle out the Narns, trying to, you know, fake papers and, you know, make up a weird Abraham Lincoln sounding Centauri name. You know, these are actions of a coward in the fact that he's not getting his hands dirty, but he knows the smart way of doing it. And it's entirely the same character. There isn't really that big change in arc like Jakar, but it's done so well that it's almost at the same level. You know, their acting just portrays these two characters in completely different ways, but at the same level of acting.
Absolutely. And he's a very strong character as well. He's incredibly brave. He stands up to Mr. Morton. He just waves him away, you know, dismisses him. He says, I don't want to talk to you, blah, 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 you're just a bad guy, whatever. And he stands up to him to the point where Morden actually gets frustrated and walks away in one of the scenes. You know, he realizes he can't fight him because he has no fear of him. He does, but he's not showing it. He's likable, he's honorable, and he's got that strength of character as well, which is, absolutely love the guy. Love the character, and the actor behind it is brilliant.
And the smile and the wave that he does.
Oh,
it's the best.
Yes.
It's how we sign off our every recording that we do, that some of our audience doesn't know about. But we always smile and wave like Veer.
Smile and wave.
Even when we're doing Cosmic Pizza, it's not even anything to do with Epsilon. We are still doing the wave.
It's going to be embarrassing when we meet up for real, and then as we're leaving and we're saying goodbye to each other, we're going to be waving, and they go, ooh, hello, bye. People are going to be going, oh, hello, those two guys.
Everyone in the pub's kind of looking, why are they just slowly backing away from each other, waving sinister?
That's amazing. And the Narns in general through this season three, I mean, they've obviously been displaced. They've got, you know, their homeworld's been attacked, the place is in ruins, they're taken as prisoners. Pretty horrific scenes and the things that have happened to them over the season are pretty appalling.
Yeah, it's like a would you say it's like a Jewish allegory or a Bajoran allegory?
Certainly, well, yeah. It couldn't be a Bajoran allegory because it would have come first. Mm. So, but certainly, yeah. I mean, obviously, any science fiction show that shows some sort of war, it's either the Nazis and the Jews or something along those lines. It's the latest war that we've had that we can sort of show and tell. And ironically, this was being filmed when the Balkan War was on. So. If anybody had any sort of realization of what was happening at that time, it was Mia Farlane who obviously came from that region. And she saw half the things that were going on there and then started to act as a character who had seen those sorts of things and was living through another battle. It must have been pretty horrible time to be playing that character. You can see the atrocities that were happening there were similar to what was going on with the Jews. Mm-hmm. So, mass graves and the place is still, still scarred from those battles many years ago.
Yeah. And having Jakar sort of going on a spiritual journey then sort of shifts it from the oppressive side of seeing war to more the kind of oppressive British government on India. You've got Gandhi, he's trying to lead a peaceful resolution and rather than an outright rebellion, and his people are suffering under the yoke of the Centauri sort of imperialism, and that shift happens in this season. And you go from these warriors in the first couple of episodes where they're fighting and they discover the shadows are helping out the Centauri to these put upon completely, they've got the boots on their necks, standing on their own home turf, and they're trying to just drive the Centauri out whilst also fighting this much bigger global conflict. And it's mirrored and reflected and informs the choices of Jakar. And then you've got every Narn that we meet has a different sort of backstory as well. So they aren't just this monolithic sort of blanket two-dimensional character every time. I forget, who's the bodyguard who Talon, Sheridan saved on?
Is it Talon?
Is Narun?
It Talon? Talon?
Oh, yeah.
No, the guy Narun. With the samurai sword that isn't a samurai sword.
Yeah, is that Narun?
The Narn.
Narun is a Mimbari.
Oh, he's big Mimbari brother. Yeah. Guy.
So I think Talon.
It will be Talon then, yeah.
But like you had him, and he's got his own honor quest, and he's got his own journey. Then you had the capitulation sort of leader who was coming to see Jakar, who just says, "Look, just give in to their demands. Just work with the Centauri. That's the only way we're going to get rid of them." So you had all these different lovely little characters as well. So it wasn't just that they were saying, when we're talking about the Narn, they're all the same. They all have their own different ways of resolving this oppression that they're going under. And that's why it's still a really interesting race. I think had they gone actually the Bajoran route from DS9, there's lots of times where they just say Bajorans and they just assume that all the Bajorans react exactly the same way, and they don't. So I think that's what makes the Narns quite interesting in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not a monoculture like in Star Trek.
Mm. Mm. Oh yeah.
That's true.
Except when they're catfighting.
Well.
Yeah.
There's that.
Okay. Is there anything you guys want to bring up about season 3 before we start on season 4?
No. But so it was Convictions was sort of our worst overall. Like, I know that Sean and I didn't like it, but you rated it, I think, a little bit higher. So does that push it above something else?
So Convictions, our average for Convictions would be 2.52. And in fact, no, there is nothing lower than that in season 3.
Hmm.
It is in our group of three. It is in our bottom 10.
I seem to remember a saying in that episode that it was an episode that just didn't feel like it had to be in season 3, and it was kind of, it just went nothing. There was no tie in to anything. There was just no character development. It's almost like it should have been a season 1 episode. And I think that was something we were all sort of saying. I seem to remember that being our review for it. I may be just making it up. I don't know. But I think that's probably why. And that was the thing. It needed to stay on track. And when season 3 did that, it did it. But when it went off track and we got later episodes that should have been so much better, that's what made it stick out.
And on that note, I guess we'll see our listeners in, what, a few weeks?
Yes, we're going to take a little bit of a break. This hopefully should have been released on the 2nd of April. And it'll be the end of April, 30th of April, before The Hour of the Wolf, Season 4, Episode 1. So, yeah, we're taking a bit of a break. We will. I was going to say we will still record in between them, but actually I don't think we are we? Because I think Sean's unavailable for a bit. So we'll have to see how we get on. But anyway, we will have some episodes for you ready by the time we come back at the end of April. So join us again at the end of April, where we will be discussing Season 4, Episode 1, The Hour of the Wolf. It's the Wolf. It's the Wolf.
Wolf 359.
Ooh, could be.
Could be.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.